This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ed Lay joins us live in studio. He is an architectural historian. What should I say? Is it architectural? Everything, Ed, isn't it? I
mean, I'm also an architect.
architect, and modern design expert, architectural historian, local historian. There's very little that you have done and that you're not good at, and we're truly honored to have you here. I appreciate you coming by.
Thank you.
Let's start, if we can, with an Ed Lay 101. Where are you from, and how did you get into architecture?
Well, I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and actually I'm Pennsylvania German or Pennsylvania Deutsch, but I escaped from Pennsylvania. But I came here by way of Kansas because I taught out there for 4 years, and I came here in 1967, and this is my 40th year here now teaching.
That's fantastic.
And so I had 4 years teaching at Kansas also prior to that, and then 10 years in the profession in Pennsylvania.
Fantastic. Now, when did you know in your life when you're growing up or you're in school, when did you know it was architecture? When did you know, boy, you know, I'm going to do this?
Well, I was a strange kid, I think, because in eighth grade, I knew I wanted to be an architect. And
really? That early? 13, I think.
About that age. And at any rate, I even wrote to Penn State University and told them I wanted to be an architect. Could I get in school? And, of course, they answered politely and said, you know, you got to wait a while. But at any rate, when I did get there as an undergraduate, though, however, the dean there then remembered me writing that letter way back.
Wow.
And so that was quite an eye-opener for both of us.
That's amazing. And so what was it about a little kid in eighth grade? What was it about architecture? I'm wondering what you were looking at or reading interested you.
I was reading probably all the wrong things at the time because I went to the local in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, which is Dickinson College, where my family had been associated with for years. And I went to the bookstore there, and a man sold me this book on traditional architecture. And, of course, I didn't know it, but all architecture schools basically teach modern design. And so that was my first thing. When I went to college, I found out it was all modern architecture, but I love modern architecture.
Yeah.
So I grew up under the Bauhaus principles of modern design.
Which is what, for folks who've never even heard that term before?
Well, the Bauhaus was a group of architects in Germany in the 20s and 30s. And they were the ones that really founded modern architecture, basically. And in 1938, I think it was, that Walter Gropius came to Harvard to teach architecture from the Bauhaus, and Mies van der Rohe went to Illinois Institute of Technology to teach architecture. And so those were the first two times that people—
They planted the seed
planted
here.
Planted the seed.
And what is Bauhaus? It's German for what? Something house, I guess.
I don't know, to tell you the truth, but it was a collection of not just architects, but it was all the artists and everything. It was a very integrated thing with all the arts.
Architecture as art, really.
Yes, yes. In fact, that's what I grew up with. I had sculpture courses. I had live freehand drawing. I had courses in watercolor, all of that sort of thing, along with then all of these other very technical things.
Yeah.
So usually people who were very adept at one of those was certainly not adept at the other. And so it was sort of this schizophrenic world that we were in. And that was the old five-year programs that we went through in architecture. And in fact, I started with a class of 67. We graduated 11.
Wow.
And that's not that everybody failed. It was just that they were smarter and they got out and went into things like business and things like that. The rest of us just stuck around.
Now, is that 5 years after your undergraduate years?
No, that's 5 years undergraduate. And then I had when I went to graduate school, I did it all in philosophy, because when I got out of school as a architect, all I could talk about is architecture. It was like I had blinders on, and if somebody didn't say something about architecture, I couldn't talk to them. So I took everything then in philosophy, but I got a master's degree in architecture.
Wow! And a lot of courses in philosophy.
Oh yes, all philosophy.
Interesting.
And yeah.
So we're talking with Ed Lay of the University of Virginia, been teaching at the university now over 40 years. What is, when we talk about modern design and this movement in the 20s and 30s to launch modern design and then bring it to America, what are we talking about? What distinguished it? What were they doing differently, really, that you could look at and point to and say, wow, that now that's different?
Mm-hmm. Well, they were completely divorced from any traditional things. As I mentioned, Harvard even threw out history because they did not want anyone to be have any premeditated ideas about what architecture is. So it was all creative things. For instance, a building, we had all these dictums. It was like Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. We had the dictums like less is more and simplicity is the essence of beauty. And a building had to reflect on the exterior exactly what was on the interior of a building.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Very, very modern sort of things.
And the skyscrapers of the 50s were born out of that movement, were they?
Well, the skyscrapers really started much earlier than that in Chicago. In fact, in the turn of the 20th century.
Rebuilding after the fire, I guess.
Well, some of that. Yeah. But Holabird and Roche and different groups and Sullivan and all did the great skyscrapers in Chicago. But the modern skyscrapers of today, yes, are very modern.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, all of this, of course, is very different from the post-modern designs that we see now, which some of it you look at, you wonder, is that a building? And of course, it often has nothing to do with what's on the inside and is a statement about what's around the building often and very, very different.
Yeah, well, the post-modern movement came about, actually, as a rejection of the modern movement. In architecture. It was also in literature and every other thing,
sure,
too.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But the postmodern movement, basically what happened was that suddenly we decided as architects that all the things we used to be taught to laugh at, which is all these traditional buildings being built at the turn of the 20th century, suddenly we thought, gee, all these people really don't like living in these modern houses we're designing. We have a little trouble getting clients and so on. So therefore, when I went back to school, I was really disturbed by all of that. In fact, my wife is a landscape architect, and we both gave up a very lucrative career and went back to school. And I decided did not want to sit down and do another design because I'd already been out in the profession for 10 years and I was with a Frank Lloyd Wright protege and we did a lot of things that were in magazines and so on. The last thing I wanted to do is sit there and do drawing. That's why I did philosophy. And also then I decided I was going to write something and it was called Contemporary Design Philosophy in American Architecture. I was so naive. I interviewed all these great architects, Philip Johnson and all these people, and asked them, what is your philosophy of architecture? Of course, what a stupid idea. But at any rate, that was what I did. And out of all that then came this little thesis that I did. And they actually published 100 copies of it. And I wouldn't want anybody to see it now. But at any rate, what it was basically was I said in it, that the modern movement isn't one single thing, devoid of regionalism and all, like we were taught, but it is actually starting to become different things. And there was a man by the name of Louis Kahn in Philadelphia who sure. became my idol because he was sort of a transition person between all of these things. And so therefore, I actually identified more than one movement within the modern movement, which was sort of unheard of. That was 1966. And that same year, the great architect, Robert Venturi, came out with his stunning book called Complexity and Contradiction in American Architecture, where he said, where we used to say simplicity is the essence of beauty and all that sort of thing, he said simplicity is a bore. And so...
And the postmodern movement was born, I guess.
It was sort of born out of all that. And yeah. then Bob...
And you were there with your work and your interviews there at that moment.
Yeah,
sort
it,
of
was, it was.
Opening the door and recognizing and telling folks, hey, there's a change coming here.
Well, it was amazing. That's all. And not just me, but a few others were in the same thing. And Bob Stern is another one who was the dean at Columbia and now is the dean at Yale. He came out with a book then in 68, where called New Directions in American Architecture, where he said, actually, there isn't just two movements, but there's three different things that he defined in the modern movement. So they're sort of tearing it down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of us then in teaching and all decided, well, let's go back and look at what we used to laugh at. And where did that come from? And that was the Renaissance, basically. And then we went back into the classicism and all. And that's where all of this was born, all this postmodern things.
We're talking with Ed Lay, architect at the University of Virginia. Been teaching at UVA, Mr. Jefferson's University, since 1967. Ed, what makes a good architect? What makes an architect, when you look at his or her work and you say, that's good?
Well, yeah, that's hard to define without really, you know, studying it all these years. But basically, just like any profession, very few people are really great, okay? There are some architects who are really great. And Mies van der Rohe was one, the great architect. In modern architecture, some of the things that make it great is that everyone looks at modern architecture and they say, Joe, it's so simple, anybody could do that. But actually, it is more difficult to design a modern building than it is to do a traditional building, because all of the connections of the building and all require the ultimate in actual designing it to make it all work, to come together. And so modern buildings are something that comes about through time, and it's a little hard to describe.
I'm thinking of actually the World Trade Center and the buildings, the two of the Trade Center, mm-hmm. of course, was a collection right. of buildings, but the two skyscrapers that were side by side, amazing, really, artwork. I mean, if you really look at it and mm-hmm. study what they did and that team mm-hmm. did, just beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing, too, when you mention the World Trade Center, because when I used to have a class that went up in high-rise design, and we used to go to New York City for a week every time, and we'd go in the mornings and visit the great architects' offices, and then in the afternoon go visit buildings. And one of them we visited was the World Trade Center under construction. And so,
really?
So we went up to three-quarters of that building, and I know the workmen just got a big kick out of this, taking us up in this freight elevator way up there. I don't know how many hundreds of floors or whatever, but at any rate, went up there, and the wind's blowing through this thing.
As they're,
and
I was actually building the thing.
Yes, wow. And I was petrified that one of us was going to drop off.
And you got these students up there with you. That's amazing. Yeah. We are so honored to be talking with Ed Lay, architect of the University of Virginia. And tell us how you got involved in the work of architectural history, because a lot of folks locally know you more as they think of you more as a historian perhaps than an architect. Your career sort of evolved in that direction. Is that fair to say?
That's true. Most people think of me as an architectural historian. But actually, I'm trained as a modern architect, like all of us really are, and that's what I was paid always to teach. My side courses were in this other thing. In other words, like every person in college usually has to teach a certain course. And in architecture, you always have to teach a design course. And then you're often allowed to teach one course that you can sort of invent. And so I invented three courses while I was there, and they were all sort of history courses. And how it came about really was in 1967 when I came, of course, I only was a 9-month employee, and so I was unemployed for 3 months. So the dean said, Ed, you ought to consider applying for one of these university grants because you're unemployed in the summer, and they're only $2,000, but it was a lot of money to me at the time. And he said, you ought to apply for that and make up something and do it. So I said, I don't know anything about this area at all. I'd like to know more about it. So I'm going to, in another naive thing, I'm going to say that I will document buildings in 7 counties in 1 summer. Boy, was I naive.
In 1 summer.
At any rate, I got the grant. It was the first grant ever given in architecture. And, of course, I never finished it. I did, though, do a survey of practically every road in 7 counties, a photographic survey. And then the next year, the provost called me in and said, Ed, we've never given a second one of these, but this is an interesting thing you're doing. Why don't you apply again? And so I did, and I did a second one. And guess what? I'm still working on it to this day.
Decade, 40 years later, documenting the architectural history of Central Virginia.
Yes.
Amazing.
I actually do it all over Virginia, but primarily in Central Virginia.
We're talking with Ed Lay, and honored to have him in studio. And I really want to explore this topic of architectural history and the history of Central Virginia and the history of this built environment, as architects call it. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about the very idea of these old buildings and perhaps historic preservation, which you've been involved in as well and has been a topic that you've dealt with throughout your career. This idea of preserving the history of this design by letting the building stand and not tearing it down. We've done that some in Central Virginia. You certainly see it at the university. We've lost some other buildings that perhaps very regrettably that we lost to development. Share your thoughts about this. General idea of preserving history by preserving the built environment that was created in the past.
Well, as you know, we've lost more buildings than we've saved. And so after a while, after you lose a lot of buildings, after, you know, trying to save them, everybody comes up to you and says, gee, Ed, aren't you sad about that? But after a while, you become so numb to it all. But when you win one, you're so thrilled that you won one. And we've had some really tragic ones that have come down. One of them was, I hate to say the name, but I should, I guess, Enniscorthy, which was in my other book, a book before my last book. The whole book centered around this house, Enniscorthy. And they decided, someone purchased it, and decided that they wanted a lot more building on it and all, and get rid of all the old buildings there. So the first thing they did is they tore off the whole back end of the building and put in an Olympic swimming pool. Then they took a lot of the outbuildings out back. There were a lot of them, and tore them all down. Except for the three oldest ones, they moved them a mile away. And then that wasn't the end of it, because then they decided, this was this great road, which is the old Green Mountain Road. It goes down through there, just a beautiful road.
And this is Southern Albemarle.
This is Southern Albemarle, south of Charlottesville. And it's a road on which you feel like you're in another century going down it. And all of these wonderful houses are along it. Well, this person then, who's no longer owning this house, by the way, this person then decided to pave the road and make it like a highway on just on his property, which is a lot of the property. And so that wiped out some of the ambiance of all the road and all. And then he decided to change the road into the building. So all these wonderful, the gateway that was there and all, was all destroyed, and he put a new road into the house. So he even destroyed that. And then the final blow was, on a weekend, the oldest bank barn in all of the county, it was in the 1700s, he demolished and even burned everything in it. And it had all this wonderful woodwork in it and all. And then he even wiped out the hill. You can't even tell it was on a bank.
Now, for folks who are listening who are thinking perhaps, well, you know, he owned it. He should be able to do whatever he wants with it. What is it that we lose? I mean, preserve?
Well, the thing about it is, a lot of people who own things just don't understand it. And so in some ways, sometimes they're not at fault, okay?
And because they don't know what they have.
Because they don't know what they have. And he was from out of state, and he did not, probably don't know what he had. And at any rate, unfortunately, that's a lot of the issue. And a lot of them, even if they want to preserve something, they don't really know what to do. And therefore, and also, a lot of architects are really not trained, as you're getting now, in really historic restoration. There are only a few really great ones.
Interesting. We're talking with Ed Lay, architectural historian and architect at the University of Virginia, and he is live in studio. We're going to take a break for local news and weather and continue this conversation on the other side. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We are honored to be talking with Ed Lay, architect and architectural historian from the University of Virginia. And Ed, you're still teaching, right?
I'm still teaching now through continuing studies.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
And I had a summer program for about 13 years.
As there. A sidebar, let me just say the School of Continuing and Professional Studies at UVA, for folks who don't even know what that is, check it out. It's amazing what they do, and the breadth and depth of what they're able to accomplish is fantastic. And it's very Jeffersonian. They make these great minds like you over at UVA so accessible to the community. And I'm a big fan of what they do, and it's good to hear that you're involved with them. So we were talking about historic preservation. I'm curious if you could share some of your, and by the way, folks, the phone lines are open 977-1070. If you've got a comment or a question for Ed, or just want to say hello, I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. We're talking with Ed Lay, has been teaching at the University of Virginia since 1967, architect, and known locally here mostly, I guess, as a historian of local architecture. Can you point to some buildings or structures here locally that you look at that that you really like or that are dear to you?
Well, one of the my favorite buildings in all of Virginia is not right here in Albemarle County, although there are several here that I really love, such as Esmont in this county is a wonderful building. But this is up.
And for folks who don't know, that's an estate.
That's a private home.
Yeah,
yes,
Esmont.
In the southwestern part of the county.
Right.
And any rate, the one, though, I think is really great is the one done in 1815, and it's Upper Bremo Plantation, which is along the James River in Fluvanna County. In fact, there are three Bremos there, and all three Bremos are still in the same family to this day.
Kidding.
And they're all private homes, yes.
Since the early 19th century?
Yeah, yes.
That's amazing.
And General John Hartwell Cock, you may have heard of him.
Sure,
who
sure.
was a founder of on the founding board of the University of Virginia for 33 years. It was his home.
Right, at Bremo Bluff, right?
Is that Bremo Bluff, yeah. Yes. And that house is just extraordinary. It has all the things that even we in modern architecture like to talk about, you know, all the wonderful, wonderful things that are going on. And, of course, the lawn at the university is probably one of the finest buildings anywhere around. It has everything to do with what modern architecture is all about. It has all the inconsistencies and contradictions that we just love so much. Everybody looks at Jefferson's work, for instance, and thinks everything is symmetrical, but it's very subtly asymmetrical. You think of the lawn, and no two rooms are the same in design on the lawn, no two facades, because Jefferson wanted them to study different architecture. But also, in addition to that, the door across from one pavilion on the lawn to the other does not align. The land drops off, as you well know, from north to south in parterres, from the rotunda on the lawn. But as soon as you turn the corner in the gardens, they're flat on the west side. And as soon as you turn the corner then to the ranges on the west side, the land actually goes in the opposite direction, from south to north. Even architects, even my colleagues don't understand that. I never even noticed that. And then, of course, on the east side, the gardens drop off very rapidly from west to east and are 20 feet wider than the ones on the other side. And just like Monticello, no two rooms are alike in Monticello.
And aren't the columns along the colonnade on the lawn, aren't they spaced differently?
Yeah, they're all spaced differently. The student rooms increase between the pavilions going south. And a lot of my colleagues say Jefferson didn't intend what I think really happened. And what really happened was it gives a greater illusion of perspective from the entrance to the university, which was at the southern end of the lawn.
At the foot of the lawn, right.
Where the old three-notch road was. And the ha-ha, the drop-off of land, so you didn't have a fence.
Yeah.
And to keep the cattle out was there and all, and that's was the entrance. So it looks like greater perspective from that way, distance.
Interesting. We're talking with Ed Lay, architect and architectural historian. I'm going to ask you to put those headphones on. We have a call on line one, and Lori has been waiting patiently. Lori, thanks for the call. You're on with Ed Lay. You go right ahead.
Thank you. Hi, I'm new to Virginia, new to Charlottesville, just moved here from Arizona, and I love historic architecture. I just wanted to know where the best place would be for me to start to learn about the architecture of this area.
Well, I got a book I can suggest for you.
Well, there's a book I can suggest, but my book, but also I have a class in continuing studies, which is the architecture. It's called Historic Virginia Buildings, which is really the architecture of Virginia. The fall course is from 1607, the founding of Virginia, through Jefferson, 1830, and the spring course is 1830 up to World War II, 1939. And we actually have field trips at the end.
Oh, that's great. And also, Laura, you can check out the title of Ed's most recent book is The Architecture of Jefferson Country, Charlottesville in Albemarle County, Virginia. And that's available at Amazon. You can just search Ed Lay and find it. And that is an incredible, incredible book. And it also has the CD-ROM, right?
Yeah, I have a CD-ROM out, right. The book talks about 800 buildings and has 400 illustrations, and the CD-ROM has 2,400 buildings and 3,300 illustrations.
Yeah, there you go. Well, welcome to Charlottesville.
Well, thank you.
And thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. We're talking with Ed Lay, architect and architectural historian of the University of Virginia. You were talking about Mr. Jefferson, and I have to ask you, there is an ongoing debate now, and it has been going on for some time at the university, in the larger community and in Charlottesville, about the buildings as they are created at the university. Should they mimic or speak to or use the Jefferson, the academical village as a template? Like, should everything have a colonnade, in other words? Or should we do what Jefferson would have done if he was here and just think outside the box and do something very imaginative and creative? I know when the JPA, the JPJ was built, John Paul Jones Arena, it was very controversial. A lot of architects just didn't like it. They said, you know, this is a huge brick box with a colonnade thrown on the side to make it look like it should be at the university. And a lot of folks were very disappointed. We should also point out, though, that it has won awards. And there's a lot of folks who absolutely love the design. And of course, we're talking about just the outside at this point. But your thoughts on that debate, because it continues to rage.
well, that particular building it actually was designed by my student, Bob Moji. And he has got a lot of flack from that and all. But actually, I think you can design in both ways. You can design traditional buildings, and you can also design very modern buildings. My own preference would be for the extension of the lawn, which is not what is happening. My own preference would be to do modern buildings from there on, and I think Jefferson would have done that.
To do more modern buildings and not mimic the academical village.
Yes,
so
yes.
Not
well,
try
you
to
could
put
you can mimic it in other ways, though. Jefferson always envisioned that U-shaped part to be extended because it was open to the world, okay?
The
education open to the world.
Right.
And the pavilions would keep going and so on. And you could do that also in a sympathetic way by mimicking maybe the forms of the buildings, the three-dimensional forms and so on, but to keep them in a modern way. Jefferson was really a modernist in many ways. He was always doing very modern things in architecture. And looking at very modern things. In fact, Pavilion 9 is a very, very modern building.
And why is that?
He was looking at the visionary architects of the day, like Ledoux. And that is a perfect cube of a building with just a cutout for window with a little door where the little exedra is. Very modern building.
We're talking with Ed Lay, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Got a caller on line one. Caller, what's your first name?
This is David.
David, you go right ahead. You're on with Ed Lay.
I just wanted to say hello to Professor Lay. When Lori called earlier and asked a good overview, the course that Ed teaches is absolutely amazing, not just because it's a good overview of what you're going to see around here, but it's also a wonderful group of people. Ed is the centerpiece of a really vibrant preservation community around here. And when you go attend this class of his, you will surrender a night of a week for a little while, and you'll meet 30 or 40 of the most interesting people in real estate, preservation, homemakers, business people. It's a really wonderful center of the social scene that he's in as well.
Now, who is this I'm talking to?
This is David from down at Bundoran Farm.
Oh, David, how are you?
The
best student I ever had.
A couple of years ago.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for your kind words. And David's right. In other words, what is so wonderful about that class is very few times there are even architects in it. They're all from we have medical doctors, all kinds of people, builders, realtors. People from all different disciplines. So it's a wonderful class, a challenging class to teach, but a wonderful class.
David, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let me get your thoughts about the downtown mall, which I think doesn't get enough recognition and credit, as far as I'm concerned, as somebody who has studied local history, as a as a major historic preservation project. People sort of look at it as, well, they just they took Main Street and bricked it off and made a walking promenade. But it, when in fact it was a huge effort at historic preservation, because they were in a way returning it to how it may have looked long ago, and I don't think it's thought of enough that way, that all of a sudden the old buildings on that mall, well, for example, we started referring to it as the historic downtown mall, mm-hmm. when there's nothing really historic about it. It was built in the 70s, but the buildings on it, we sort of look at them in a different way now because they're on a brick promenade versus a busy street. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That is another grouping of buildings there that I would say is very successful in architecture. And a lot of that comes about through the vision of the time of the people who were in the city council and all. And another man, Satyendra Hooja, who really came here from Cornell, a visionary of a person in planning. And he has done so much for historic preservation. I was on the chair of the Board of Architectural Review for him, and the chair of the Landmarks Commission at the time. And also, I even took, before the mall was built, we took and closed off, students and I, closed off a piece of the mall to show that it can work even without the traffic going through and stuff like that. That was
because it was very controversial.
Very controversial.
There were a lot of even architects, even some of your colleagues, who said this will destroy downtown.
Yes, yeah, and it's one of the very few malls in America that are really functioning. I was down there the other day to go to the Paramount, and I just thought, wow, this is just fantastic.
It works.
It's so vital, and it really works.
Yeah,
wonderful.
And what do you think it is? Because there are other communities that literally have pulled up their bricks. They tried it, and it didn't work.
I know. I think it has a lot to do with the foresight of the people in city council and so on, who really brought this along, and in the planning department there over the years.
Yeah. And I agree with you that Satyendra Hooja, who's now a member of city council and former director of community development and planning, has done an amazing job and often doesn't get the kind of recognition that he deserves and should. I remember talking to him years ago about when he first got to Charlottesville. And I said, what's the first thing you did when you got to Charlottesville and you looked around? And he said, the trees on West Main Street. He said, we planted trees. Yeah. Yeah, that's the first thing I did. And the murals along West Main Street. Because he said, I knew we need trees down here that will continue bring in a little bit of a natural landscape into that urban environment. Yeah. And now when you look at West Main Street, oftentimes you might not see those trees, but it really does look very different.
He made great changes to this community, and he was just a real – he was a thorn in a lot of people's sides, of course, like anyone is in administration, because I was in administration for years too. And, you know, you make friends and you make enemies, but in the long run, he's just done a great job.
We're talking with Ed Lay, architect and architectural historian. Before we let you go, can you share any of your thoughts at 40 years at the University of Virginia, over 40 years, thoughts about changes you've seen at UVA or even in Central Virginia? You've certainly watched this community grow, to say the least.
Well, there have been a lot of changes, to say the least. And the biggest changes, I think, is the traffic. When I came here in 67, my wife and I, who had also been in planning for a while too, we said then, This community needs a bypass, a way out there bypass. And of course, it wasn't done. And now today, it's never going to be done.
And you mean not the 250 bypass?
No,
I'm
talking about the Western bypass.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when they even designed the one, it was too close to town to start out with. And, you know, everything was going wrong with that. And I don't think in my lifetime we're ever going to see a bypass or a Meadowbrook Parkway or anything happening here. And I'm a big environmentalist too, by the way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, things have I think a lot of us who are more liberal in things like this, we go over the wall sometimes and go to the extreme. And so there needs to be some compromises now and then. Otherwise, after a while, nobody listens to you either. So.
Ed Lay is an architect at the University of Virginia, an architectural historian. His latest book. That I will encourage you to get is The Architecture of Jefferson Country, Charlottesville and Albemarle County, Virginia. It's available at Amazon and
also
bookstores.
The Albemarle County Historical Society.
The Albemarle County Historical Society.
Has it at a discount.
Has it at a discount, even better. Like to hear that. Ed, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you as well for you know, all the work that you have done in this community, the generations of lives that you've touched with your brilliance and your vision and your leadership, you have certainly had a very profound and positive impact on our community, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.